Blog Talk Radio.
To an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this astounding future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I'm super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, man. Doing great. We've had a long break, and I don't know about you, but I'm glad to be doing the show again. So it was a little too long.
Good to be back. We always take some kind of a break in the summer, and I was gone. I was out of the country for a couple weeks, so that created some, our kind of normal hiatus. And then just after I got back, it seemed like something came up every Thursday. So we've had, I don't know, more than a month off, about five or even, surely not 6 weeks, but 5 weeks anyway, I think, since we've...
A little bit more than a month, sure. And that is okay. We just store up the awesomeness.
That's right. Charge our batteries. I mean, we're farther behind on the future than we were before, but that's okay. We can get caught up. We can get caught up in one night. No problem. We just
no problem.
We just push right through it. And we were saying we posted this show last week, but at the last minute weren't able to do it. So we've had some additional time to think about this particular topic. But this would have been a good summer show, and since we're still in summer, I think this is a good summer show. Kind of a wacky topic, kind of an out there topic. I told you I was getting some feedback from my wife that maybe we've gone off the deep end by doing a show about this. But I think this is a fun topic, and of course we're going to spin it into some other topics too. In a sense, doing a show about this shifting realities is just our way of introducing a more grab bag of some interesting topics to talk about. Before I leap into that, any big news, anything going on in your life that you want to share with us that the listeners haven't had a chance to hear about?
Oh, well, a proud dad, got a young man in college now. My oldest son is entering college, and just I'm proud of him. That's a big step for a family, and
absolutely,
that's it doesn't seem right because in some ways I still think of myself just having barely gotten out of college in school of one sort or another just a few years ago myself. I was actually finishing up law school at the time that Timothy was being born, and so it just it just seems like yesterday I was in school myself, but no, it wasn't yesterday. It was 18 years ago, so that time just rushed by. But it was good stuff. Glad that he is in school and doing well, it seems, already. So that's a big
Fantastic. Big
thing for
us. Well, Lord knows what he's getting into up there, but at least we know on Thursday evenings he's tuning into The World Transformed, I'm sure. So, welcome to the program.
One of these days, we'll get him in. We'll get him into the show one of these days. I think he'd enjoy it.
Absolutely, we'd love to have him on sometime. Well, I've got as I mentioned to you before the show, big family addition occurring next week. My oldest daughter is getting married, so we've got all kinds of fun family wedding stuff going on. next week, and that will impact when the show is, which I think we've decided it's going to be Wednesday evening, but I'll post all that both on worldtransform.com and here at Blog Talk Radio, so you'll know for sure when we're going to be on next week. But I don't know. The little ones are growing up, Stephen. What are we going to do? I guess we're just going to be two old guys doing a
we'll be doing
a radio show.
You know, and why won't these darn kids stay off our lawn show before you know it? It's,
Sadly, I feel we've already done that probably a few times.
That's right. Anyway.
I don't think we've fallen down on that at all. So let's jump into it here. We've got a fantastic topic as I mentioned. We're talking about shifting realities, and we're talking about perhaps the oddest possible way that that people could come to the conclusion that that something weird is going on in the background of the universe. You've got folks who believe that essentially the universe kind of changes on them when they're not looking. And the parallel that's used is a glitch in the Matrix. But this isn't exactly the same as a glitch in the Matrix, because as Matrix fans know, a glitch in the Matrix simply means that the software that's running the universe that we're in hits some kind of bug or error or something, and there's a discontinuity between what you remember or what you've seen and what you're currently experiencing. The Matrix. Go ahead.
Well, and it's experienced as a sense of déjà vu, right?
I was going to say one of the things that's referred to as a glitch in the Matrix in the movie is déjà vu. When you have that happen, that's because the some little malfunction in the Matrix. But this is bigger than that. Okay, this is people who believe that they have somehow moved from one reality to another reality, who have traversed the interdimensional distances, moved in the space between spaces, as they say in the latest Indiana Jones movie, somehow have gone from one universe to another universe. And the evidence that they offer up for this is stuff like the following. Is it Berenstain Bears or Berenstein Bears? Now, Stephen, did you have a vote on this one way or another? Did that one ring a bell with you?
I clearly remember it being Berenstein Bears when I was a kid. It was the Berenstein Bears. And now, everywhere you go, everywhere you look, including if you pull the kid books out of the closet and look at them, the ones that you saw as a kid that you clearly remember it being Berenstain Bears, it is Berenstain Bears, like, stain on the carpet. It's Berenstain Bears. So
Berenstain Bears. It's not Berenstain at all. And yet you clearly remember that it was steam.
Yeah,
right?
I do. How about you? How do you remember that as a kid? Keeping in mind, Berenstain Bears were not my big thing when I was a little kid. I was there were other things that I enjoyed more, but Berenstain Bears were in the background.
I'm actually old enough that my memory of these bears is from raising my oldest daughter. So I raised a child on them rather than having them in my own childhood. And
yep.
I'm going to have to say that I no longer have clear memories on this subject. Okay.
Okay.
This has confused me enough to where I don't know anymore. I think I would have said Berenstain before, but now I'm not 100% sure. The more I talk to people like you, okay, so maybe the delusion is contagious or something. I don't know, but it's an idea that I go, maybe it was Berenstain, or was it Berenstain? And I actually can't remember now which it was, but I certainly don't have distinct memories. To me, it's not jarring that it's Berenstain. Okay, I look at that and I go, oh, okay,
yeah,
that's the name of those bears, I suppose. and I think no more of that than I do the name of any other, strawberry shortcake or any other Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, anything else I might have been reading books about 20 years ago. But here's what so let's continue with this, Stephen. How do you account for that? How do you account for that difference? Your memory versus the reality of how it's spelled.
Well, the meme going around the internet is that about 5 or 6 years ago, a time traveler must have left the reality that we remember, where there were always the Berenstain Bears, and traveled back in time a number of years, and did something to cause the name to be changed to Berenstain. For whatever reason, because it was a key childhood memory or whatever, we remember it. Although, in this reality, it is changed. We remember the old reality because we experienced that first or whatever. Do I buy that even a little bit? No, I don't. I don't. Not even a little bit. But it's a fun thought. Now, here's an interesting thing. Where I was reading about it, they said, this time traveler must have traveled back about 20 years or so and did something to change the name of the Bears. Well, no, you'd have to go back further than that, because the author's names are what these Bears are named after. It was Stan and Jane Berenstain. So this time traveler had to go back in time far enough to change the family's name somehow. And that's the only way that would make any sense. So,
well, I don't know that the time traveler is the only mechanism offered up by which this could have occurred. Although I think you have debunked that one thoroughly. I mean, the problem is that time traveler has to go back in time and, well, what's he do? He changes the spelling on Ellis Island or something, right? I mean, somehow he goes back and changes the spelling.
Something like that, yeah.
Of somebody's name. So that, everything else still falls into place and we still get the Bears and it's just the spelling that's changed. That is one possible means. The other thing could be happening is just some people are just sort of bouncing around between universes. People who remember them as Berenstain, they've stayed here in this universe where it was always Berenstain, and people like you, Stephen, are relative newcomers to this reality. Somehow you have shifted, right, from the universe you were in, where it was spelled Berenstain, and you still carry those memories with you because that was the reality you were in, and something bounced you, right, pushed you over into this universe. Now,
what is that? What is the name of that sci-fi show? The it was a recent sci-fi show. It had it starts with an F. It's sort of like a new X-Files, but better.
Fringe
dealt a lot with this sort of thing.
Parallel universes were a big part of Fringe. Yeah, not to spoil it for anybody who hasn't watched it yet.
Yeah, if you haven't watched it, highly recommend it. It's on Netflix. Start at the very beginning and move forward. It's really good. And
the series is worth it for the
episodes.
Nimoy scenes alone. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it'll take a while to get to Nimoy if you start at the beginning. But start at the beginning. You want to start at the beginning. It's a good show.
Well,
but anyway,
there's stuff laid out there even in the early episodes. Okay, so in Fringe
they talk about apparently I stepped through the Fringe portal or whatever and it's at some point without my knowledge and entered this reality.
Exactly. A bunch of you somehow slid into this universe. Which to me and it's not just this. It would be an odd little theory if it were just this, but there are a whole slew of phenomena that are attributed to people moving from one universe to another universe. A somewhat more serious one is described by what's called the Mandela effect. And this is where, similar to people remembering Berenstain Bears as Berenstain Bears, a whole bunch of people remember Nelson Mandela dying a lot earlier than he actually died. They remember him dying while he was still in prison. And, it's a very odd thing. They have these memories, from this alternate timeline that they've carried into this reality. Another one I discussed with my sister, who I don't know if I should mention this, is actually of this camp, believed that New Zealand used to be in a slightly different place than where it is. So they can be, historical, literary, geographic, any kind of phenomenon, anything about the world that can change people can be in this universe, the one that we're currently in and experiencing, and apparently have memories of a different version of that universe. But some of them seem to be more compelling and seem to have larger numbers of followers. Why those particular ones would, you know, why would this particular universe be full of people who spelled the, you know, bear names differently, or who remembered the Nelson Mandela thing differently, right? Or who remembered New Zealand differently, as opposed to, you know, something else, had a different memory story for Ronald Reagan, or for, you know, the location of Hawaii, right? Or you know what I'm saying? It's like, why would it cluster
yeah.
around those particular phenomena? Well, I haven't read any particular explanation as to that. And it raises a few other questions for me, too, which is, what happened to the other Stephen, right? You know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, so if you're here now, and you used to be in the Berenstain universe, is the Stephen who was here, right? Because there was this universe has been going on all this time. What happened to him, right?
He's in the neighboring universe freaking out that it's not Berenstain Bears, right?
Maybe. I don't know. Is it a direct swap, or did he get moved where it's like Baron Stone, and he's like, come on, that's ridiculous, right? You know?
He has clear memories of Nelson Mandela being president of South Africa, and everybody's
right.
saying, you're crazy. You know,
well, he died in prison.
Unfortunately, he died in jail. You know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, why it's happening, don't know. What happens to the people who were in the universe, you know, holding down the slot before you? We don't know. you know, I have to say, aesthetically speaking, okay, if this is evidence for parallel universes, I don't like it, okay? This is not the parallel universes I was looking for, okay? This is, right? Because it just makes the world so darn strange if that's what's actually going on. But I would ask, Stephen, is it possible that that's happening? Can we completely rule that out as a possibility?
There is a way of thinking about these things that I like the best. It's Occam's razor, you know.
Okay.
If there is a, you know, two competing hypotheses about what could, you know, about explaining anything, and one of them is more far-fetched or more complicated, but they equally explain it. They're, you know, but one's more complicated or far-fetched or whatever. Then you go with the one that's simpler, okay?
Right.
You know, and I think the simpler explanation is Berenstain Bears and Berenstain Bears are closely related. And you and there is a tendency, particularly with new readers, to sort of just gloss over the back half of a long word. You read the first half of the word and then sort of gloss over and get to the next thing. And so you never really, particularly as a young reader, look that closely at the second half of Berenstain Bears and Berenstain Bears, I should say. And so you get in your mind that it's the Berenstain Bears, because there's so many names that end in Stein. And
likelier name, doesn't it? Berenstain just seems like a likelier name than Berenstain.
It does. Yeah, I mean, what other names can you think of that end in stain? There might be a few, but I'm not aware of too many. But anyway, that explains that. And as far as the Mandela effect, remembering that he died in jail, I have vivid memories of being a young person in high school, and Mandela was still in jail at that time, and thinking to myself, wow, he's been in jail like for 20 years. He is never getting out of there. He is going to die in there. And I think that a lot of people during those days probably thought that, internalized that, and in their minds wrote him off. And because they did, they now have clear memories of him having died when he didn't. And so I think that to me is explains these little glitches a lot better than, you know, it explains it equally well as, you know, parallel universes would explain it, but it's a lot simpler and it coincides with our experience with reality a little better. So,
what about New Zealand?
Extraordinary.
What about New Zealand?
Extraordinary
Steve?
Evidence.
What's that? What about New Zealand?
That's a good one. I don't have any memory of it being anywhere other than where it is now. But where was this memory said to have put New Zealand versus where it is
now?
Well,
I've seen in conversations I've had with people, it's more kind of to the right on the globe than where you see it. Although there's this scene from a movie where they show it, and it's like way off to the left of Australia. And it's bigger, way bigger than it's supposed to be. It's like this almost this little mini Australia sitting right next to Australia. So I don't know. I think there are various locations for where New Zealand is supposed to be, which in itself is interesting. If there are multiple locations, but somehow the discontinuity centers around New Zealand, that in itself is interesting. Because if it's, you know, all got perfectly rational explanations, as you're suggesting, I mean, not that this is an irrational explanation, it's just a kind of a harder one to get your head around. But if it's some kind of false memory, it could be that New Zealand is one of the last places you learn about, you don't spend as much time on it, and maybe you just don't get the position down. You get it down wrong for whatever reason, right? It's down there in a corner of the world. Where sometimes actually looking at maps of Asia, I get all mixed up about my easts and my wests anyway, because I travel west to go to Asia, which is the Far East, and it gets a little confusing. You know, it's like the other side of the world where up is down and left is right and so forth. You know, maybe it's that. I have to agree in principle with you, Stephen, that Occam's razor tells me that if the choice is people are bouncing around between parallel universes or people's brains are creating false memories, brains creating false memories seems more likely. Because I know I've got some memories from my childhood that I don't think are things that really happened. You know what I mean? It's like sometimes you get you know, confused between a dream and or a story that you've heard and things that have actually occurred. So I think it's definitely more likely that people are remembering things wrong. And for some reason, they're clustering around a few interesting areas that make the thing seem more mysterious than it does. However, I will say this. I'm not going to rule it out as completely impossible, and I will direct your attention to the 9 weirdest implications of the many worlds interpretation by our good friend George Dvorsky over in IO9. Wrote this a while back because I got thinking about, well, okay, if this is happening, it's some kind of riff on the many worlds interpretation. So I thought I'd just read through this list, and we'll see. Well, how many of these gears does it actually strike? We live in a multiverse of gargantuan proportions. We would have to, you know. I mean, that goes without saying. If people's subjective experience is somehow moving from one to the other, because you need all these different versions of the universe. The one where New Zealand's right. In different places. The one where Mandela had a different life. All of it. The next one is the single narrative of your life is an illusion, because actually all possibilities for your life are being fulfilled. And that actually falls right in line with what people are saying, right? That somehow they're on a different quantum branch than the one they should be. But it seems to follow that they've been sort of branching off. It's just that, you know, somehow the train stopped at a stop that's not even on its line, it seems. Is the one exception to that. There are countless versions of you. I think we've established that, right? There's Stephen who was originally in this universe, and there's you who came from the Berenstein universe to live in our universe with us, and welcome, by the way. Thanks for coming to join us here in this universe. There's the fact that you still have free will, which I think is neither here nor there for this discussion. There's the fact that there must be some very strange worlds out there. And in fact, you and I were talking about this. Our joke last week was, when I canceled at the last minute, that there's a universe in which we already did the show, right? And
yeah, we didn't cancel.
My response right before the show started was,
there's
in fact, Stephen,
there's a very close. Now, here's one thing. I don't know if this is one of the implications that George Dvorsky got to, but I would say to you, Phil, that there are some realities that are some parallel universes that are quite close, and others that are very distant from us that are bizarre. and very strange realities where we would not feel at home at all. So the ones that are closest to us are if this Berenstain Bear thing was the case, and there's a lot of universes where, you know, if we found ourselves in them, we wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't be readily apparent to us that we were in a new universe. You know,
well,
most of these neighboring parallel realities.
Right. We're constantly moving into new ones anyway, according to many worlds, right? I mean, just it's an endless progression from one universe to the next. And
if everything possible that can happen is a different branch of quantum reality, then every instant branches off an infinite parallel universes.
Right. So, and we're aware of so little that's actually going on in this universe. We could be living in a universe 5 seconds from now that's completely discontinuous from our universe in thousands of ways, and we would never know it because it's stuff that we aren't aware of, right? But these phenomena, you know, are centered on things people do know about and are aware of. So I think that's, you know, some anthropic principle of how we get bounced around between universes must be in place. But I want to come back to that because I think that's important. There must be some very strange worlds out there. Are they too shy to say it? Where are the people from the really freaky worlds, right? You know, where...
I have clear recollections that there were T-Rexes, you know, that we had to take down, you know, Brontosaurus burgers, you know, and
exactly. The events in Godzilla happened. You know, Elvis is alive. He was elected president in 1996. You know, those kinds of things, right?
Yeah.
I guess we'd say they were crazy, right? That's the problem. If people had memories of those things, we would keep them to themselves.
If those who have those memories keep them to themselves because they want to be labeled as crazy, I guess. You know, so.
Okay, so number six is you're immortal, sort of. It gets into quantum immortality. We've talked about that before. We're not going to spend any time on that tonight. Number seven is communication between parallel worlds may be possible. And see, when I read that, I'm going, well, hang on. So this is more than communication, though. This is the moving of entire subjective experience from one parallel universe to another. So even if communication may be possible, and George talks about how an ion trap could be used to kind of send a signal from one universe to another, it still doesn't account for how somebody's entire, you know, subjective experience could move from one to another. But it doesn't rule it out either. And number eight is very interesting to me because there's no time travel paradoxes, right? Because, you know, there is no one perfect line of time, right? So past and future are all kind of going on at the same time. You know, there's universes that are way ahead of us. There are universes that are way behind us. And you could travel, quote-unquote, back in time to a universe that appears to be an ancestor, a perfect ancestor of ours, change everything you wanted, okay, to go back to your original analogy. And it wouldn't change anything in this universe, right, because we've already branched off and we're somewhere else. And number nine hits that point again. Everything has already happened and will happen again. So one of the things I would look for this to be real, other than, it's fun to talk about, and it's a little weird when you encounter these anomalies like Berenstain versus Berenstain, would be for people to come back, to come into this universe with real information from another universe, you know, an invention. Well, this already existed in the universe I was in, so now I've built it. And somebody comes forward and says, here, I built this because I already knew about it because of the universe I lived in, right? That would start to be evidence, right, for something like this occurring. I think short of something like that, for now, I think you have to just leave this as kind of a highly poetic description of a phenomenon that that we can't explain, but is probably fairly easily explained by tricks of memory or something like that. What do you think?
Yeah,
am I being
too
open-minded?
I mean, the truth of the matter is, Occam's razor doesn't always work. Sometimes it's the more complicated and more far-fetched solution that turns out to be the right one. It's just, you know, usually not. It's usually
that's why you can usually go with a mundane explanation.
You know,
The simplest explanation that covers all the facts is usually right. The problem is we don't know all the facts because we don't know what everybody's discontinuous parallel universe experience is. But the ones we do know about, Occam's Razor, I think, tells us that tricks of memory account for it pretty well. But we'll stay tuned. You know, we always come back and do more shows about parallel universes, and we're not done talking about it yet, because the rest of the topics that I actually had lined up for us tonight, I thought, well, these would all be intriguing things if someone remembered any of these things as already having happened. That would be, to me, more evidence of a parallel universe, because no one seems to remember the future. Everyone seems to be on the same timeline, right? No one is remembering coming back from the future or having lived in a world that was, you know, 50 years behind or 50 years ahead. Time seems to be moving consistently. You slip off one car and into, you know, you got two parallel trains and you slide out of one car and into the other somehow. But if someone were to remember any of these things happening, I think that they might be crazy, but it might be stronger evidence of the what am I looking for? Shift from one reality to another, because these are all definitely big shifts in reality that we anticipate coming. I guess that's my point. I've got three of them lined up here, and we can talk about any others that that you have too. But we'll start with the advent of the self-driving car and the end of the human era. This was a really interesting piece that was over on Spiked. Norman Lewis. And his essay on – actually, his title was The Driverless Car and the Fall of Man. I assume you read this, Stephen.
I did.
Basically, he says, the quest for robotic cars is underwritten by suspicion of humanity. And my comment on that was, well, it's not suspicion. I think it's, outright knowledge. I mean, Stephen, you know the statistics, and we've talked about them many times. It's not a suspicion to say that humans account for – what is it, 15 to 20,000 deaths per year just in the U.S. and in the highways, right?
The only reason we put up with it, because, I mean, can you imagine anything that we, you know, I mean, we're talking the number of people, it used to be worse than it is now. It used to be, as recently as about 10 years ago, we were losing as many people every year on the highways in the United States as the United States lost in soldiers during the entire Vietnam War. That's every single year. And the only reason that we as a society put up with it is because of the extreme utility of being able to be a mobile society. And it's not just, you know, and it's not just that it's cool or we enjoy being mobile. It's quite frankly, our society demands it. We have to be in order to, you know, to feed our people, to, you know, live the lives that we live, that, you know, we have to be mobile. And so we put up with it. And, you know, there have been things that we've done to try to get those numbers down. And cars are being built better and better and safer. But ultimately, the safest thing we can do is remove people from the equation. We're just not that good at driving. Even the best of us are not as good as the machines can be made to be. And so, a machine will never blink. It can look in all directions at the same time. It can be in contact with all the vehicles around it. So it can be talking and working out how we're going to shuffle through this intersection without even a light. That's the sort of thing that ultimately we can see with driverless cars and our self-driving cars, and it won't make deaths fall to zero. You know, we will not have perfect systems, but we can vastly improve upon the death toll that we currently experience. You know. We've said a couple of times, you know, we could self-driving cars could kill 10,000 people a year and be the best thing we've ever done.
It'd be great news. It would be fantastic.
It'd be awesome news because we just saved, you know, 30,000 people.
Right.
So, yeah. Anyway, that's is it a suspicion? No, we have every you know, we have all evidence points to the fact that we're just not that good at this.
Yeah, this is. I mean, the thing I can't get around in this piece, he writes, enabling a complex machine like a car to act autonomously and navigate a complicated infrastructure without human intervention is an incredible feat. The convergence of sensor technologies with connected vehicle communications for collision avoidance and traffic management, underpinned by faster and faster computing power, is a shining testimony to human ingenuity and ambition. But just because such technology exists, or appears to exist, that doesn't mean we should stop questioning the driverless car and its implications for the future. A legitimate starting point to ask, what problem is it trying to solve? Well, I think asked and answered, Your Honor. You know, I mean, all those people dying, all those deaths and injuries is what it's trying to solve. And, you know, I read through, it's a very long piece, and I can't get past the fact that, you know, I just don't see anything dehumanizing about a process like driving cars being automated. I don't, you know, yeah. I don't feel that we're losing an edge of our humanity with that any more than we did when we went from washboards to washing machines, right? To me, it's like that. It's like adding headlights to cars, you know. It's, you know, you make them safer. Yeah, driving is fun, and I think there will still be opportunities for people to drive on closed courses and, in games and things like that. But, you know, the idea that we're dehumanizing ourselves by taking away a skill that we only developed because of a particular point where we were in technological development, it's just, you know, it's silly. I think it's silly to say that we dehumanize ourselves by not driving our own cars. It's as silly as it would be to say that we dehumanize ourselves when we stop riding horses, right? You know, does somebody who rides a bike,
know,
are they less
people
human
ride horses. Why, you know? You know, and you know, it's something that we've done for thousands of years, ride horses, and now we're going to give it up. That's an important part of being human. Well, you know what? An important part of being human is to, you know, not accept the status quo, and to continue to try to improve upon your upon our position and our situations. That's the human imperative that you always talk about, Phil, and it's absolutely true. That is what makes us human. To never be satisfied with the status quo and continue to strive to better our situation.
Yes. So, now, if somebody woke up tomorrow and said, what's going on? How come my car won't drive itself? Right? Then we would have, I think, a fantastic example of someone, you know, either
from a
losing
parallel
it.
Parallel future. Yeah.
Yeah. Or sliding over from a parallel world where, you know, we had already implemented this technology and they got used to it, right? And suddenly back here in this world where we haven't gotten there yet. Now, that would be a good one. By the way, yeah. I was texted by one of our listeners who reminded me of two variations on this that I had meant to mention, and I want to come back to those real quick. Stephen, do you know how to spell the word dilemma?
Let's see, D-E-L-E-M-M-A, dilemma, I guess. I don't
D-I-L,
know.
D-I-L, I think. But, yeah, but okay. but two M's, double M, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I'm going to have to check.
That's correct.
Now.
No, very good, double M. Now, this is where you and I come from different universes, because I have these very distinct memories of it being spelled D-I-L-E-M-N-A, okay? Dilemma, basically. Only pronounced dilemma.
Okay.
And at some point, a spell checker informed me that it's double M, not MN. And I don't know when that was, probably sometime in the 90s, you know, when I first started using spelling checkers. And that was a very odd, disconcerting moment for me, because I could have swore that it was MNA. So there you go. I think, you know, this one, I think, clinches it that there really are people moving from one universe to another.
You know, there's all kinds of words that you know, have you spell and you realize, oh my gosh, I've been spelling this wrong for a long time. Affidavit, you know, there's a good lawyer term. You know, I was out of law school before I learned to spell it correctly, and it's funny because, you know, it's just one of those things. It's not a word that even lawyers use all that often. You use it in conversation, perhaps, and let's work up an affidavit for so-and-so to sign. until you have the spell checker correct you as you're writing a letter, requesting that an affidavit be done or something like that, you go, hey, wait a minute. It's affidavit. Okay. Not very good evidence in my mind. That's just not good enough, Phil. That just goes to show that we're bad drivers and bad spellers too, and we need
on the same lines, I think there are a lot of people who came from a parallel world where hypocrisy is spelled hypocracy, right? Because you see that all the time instead of crisy. But I know what's happening there is people are taking like bureaucracy and democracy, and they're adding the "cracy" from those words to hypocrisy, right? Instead of the actual way it's spelled. So I mean that one is straightforward. But why would multiple people think that dilemma has an N in it? Isn't that odd? I mean that is very strange. I think I can't think of a reason why. I can't think of another word that's enough like it that I would say, oh, well, they're just thinking of X, right? Which is a word similar to dilemma that does have an N, because there's like damn or damnation or something like that, but it's not that similar. It is very strange that multiple people would have that same mistake. I'm not saying that necessarily proves we came from different universes. I think there are probably simpler explanations for it than that, but something's going on there, in terms of memetics or in terms of how, we all make the same mistakes or we forget the same things that would make something like that happen. Now, here's another one. When is Thanksgiving?
I think it's the third Thursday in November, right?
Is it the third Thursday? Now I'm going to have to look this up because I believe, Stephen, it's the fourth Thursday.
Okay.
See, we are proving
we're down the rabbit hole now, aren't we?
Yeah, I don't even know which universe we're living in here. So let me just look it up here real fast. I think you just gave the exact answer that you're the fourth Thursday of November. And Stephen, there are a whole group of people who, like you, okay, remember it being on the third Thursday in November. And there you go. And you
wow.
just said
okay.
it. I mean, that was
and I mentioned they also remember
right?
Berenstain Bears, too.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you do a Venn diagram, right? There are some people who remember some things and not others, right? So there might be some people who think it's on the third Thursday, but who think it was always Berenstain, but who think New Zealand's in the wrong place, but who think dilemma is with two M's, right? I'm not sure that it's just one world that people have passed from to another. I think that that all these balls are in play at the same time. But that's got to be another good example of, for whatever reason, in our mental registers, that's just a typical mistake that that people make. I mean, if you're going the Occam's razor route, that seems like the most likely thing. Because I don't know why it would be the fourth versus the third. Why one of those would be better than the other?
Well, it, not necessarily better. It's just in that parallel universe, someone said, I think I've got something planned for the fourth Thursday of November. Let's put it on the third Thursday in November. All in favor, say aye. I'm like, aye. Okay, it's third Thursday. You know, 100 years ago that happened, and in that parallel universe, that's how it went. Someone had big plans for that fourth Thursday.
People who live in the universe where it's on the third Thursday, they get a longer Christmas shopping season. So
that's true. That's true.
for what it's worth. So I wanted to mention I wanted to mention those two, and it's interesting that you and I are on either side of. Of those two, right? I'm a dilemma guy, and you're a Thanksgiving third week of November guy. So, and you were a Berenstain guy too. So,
absolutely.
I think there's a lot of people you can find who fall into these categories. Maybe more, really, than would make it likely that people are moving from universe to universe. Because it's like, how many people original occupants of this universe, for crying out loud. It seems like everybody.
You know, I really think a fun sci-fi movie could be made with this as sort of a background element of the plot. You know. You know, do you remember this way or that way? And you know, you're identified as okay. You're from parallel universe, you know, number 64, and you know, you're over here. You're obviously 64B because it's like 64 but slightly different. You know, so that'd be pretty cool.
And we should put a treatment together. I've got the title.
Yeah, I really think
the title,
we could.
You know what the title of the movie is, Stephen?
What's that?
You know what the title of the movie is? Dilemma. Spelled with an N, right? Am I right? Come on.
Yeah, there you go.
that'd be a good movie. Okay, cool. So we got a movie idea.
Make a million. Yeah, there's an alternate reality where that happens for sure.
It's already happened. We're billionaires. It's awesome. Yeah. But shifting it back then to some of these other universes that we could end up in. Here's another one. Moving away from a world in which anything gets produced naturally. And I deliberately came up with good examples of things that used to be produced naturally, not being produced naturally. I don't know if you saw in the show notes there. I've got this example of the artificial rhino horn, which is a fantastic idea. Yeah, these guys are basically 3D printing rhino horns, and it's real. I mean, it's basically chemically identical to rhino horn, and you just take it and you go flood the market for this, so that people will stop poaching rhinoceros, right? Because you can now have your rhino horn without killing any rhinos. I don't know if you saw; it's too late for the Malaysian rhinoceros, which was just declared extinct. Very sad. Just a few weeks ago. But there's a few rhinos left in Africa, and there's a few left in a few other parts of the world. And it would be great if people would stop killing them for their horns. And you know, of all things, 3D printers might be leading to, you know, glutting the market and making it possible for people to get away from that once and for all. That would be great.
You know, if Viagra had just been invented a few years earlier, the rhinoceros might have had a better shot, you know.
Yeah, exactly, because that's really what they're getting at. They're hoping, you know.
It's an aphrodisiac, you know, and they think it's, you know, take the kids out of the room, they think it makes you horny. So there you are.
Yeah. And I believe it is considered to be to use the clinical term from commercials, a cure for erectile dysfunction. I believe they think it will do that. I doubt it does, but if it does, then these fake horns do just as well.
It's the placebo effect, almost certainly.
Probably so. But you know, the great thing is, with this 3D printer, they can make really huge rhino horns, right? And they can put them in the shops, and the guys can see them being ground, and you know, hopefully the whole psychological effect will be sated. They'll be, you know, everyone will be happy that they're getting the rhino horn that they need, and the real rhinos.
Hey, they could even put Viagra into this fake rhino horn, and it actually would work. You know?
Yeah, I don't. I feel like at that point you're just encouraging the whole thing in a way that I don't want to, but.
we went too far. We went just one step too far.
I think you went one step too far. That's right. But then here's this other story. This was over on longevityreporter.org. Rise of the Organoids, miniature human brain, most complete to date. And here, I mean, basically, we're talking about growing a human brain in a test tube. Now, this is still well short of actually, you know, the man with two brains, you know, brains in a jar. But these structures are getting more complex, more brain-like as we go, and it speaks to a future when we will be growing parts of human bodies and even human bodies completely. What's the term I'm looking for? In vitro, right? Completely outside of human bodies, right?
Yeah. What we really want though is to be able to do it in vivo. Be able to grow inside our bodies the new organ that we need.
Right.
And, yeah, we, you know, let's do it in vitro, then that would require surgery, but that's, you know, the ultimate goal I would think would be, you know what, I've got this organic brain disease that has damaged my brain, you know, give me an injection so I can regrow, the parts of my brain that I've lost or whatever. And that's, you know, that would be awesome. That would be, you know, and so how but I'm failing to see the connection. How would this, you know, are you saying that there would be, you know, some, it'd be awesome if we had people coming from a parallel universe that had already had this and describing what they saw or whatever remembered?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it, you know, move the technology ahead to, you know, another 5 or 6 generations, and you've got whole brains being grown in vitro, or perhaps brains being repaired in vivo, as you suggested, which would be even better. Because it's true, if you could, you know, if you could even grow your own brain in vitro, it's like, well, great. Now what do I do with it, right? Are we gonna put it into my head? What happens to my conscious? You know, there's all those problems about whether you're really getting anything out of the deal there or not. But yeah, if that technology can be taken to the next step, and people can regrow brain tissue, regrow, you know, even less complex structures in the bodies, which we've talked about, kidneys and livers, pituitary glands, you know, regrow their eyes so that they work better. Yeah, if someone woke up and they had memories of living in a world where that was all going on big time, and suddenly it's not going on anymore, that would be interesting to me. I mean, to me, that would be a truly shifted reality to have moved from. And more interesting in a lot of ways than how you spell dilemma, or what day Thanksgiving falls on. But you don't hear about anybody, you know, talking along those terms. We talk about these kinds of things every week. We're always talking about where this is going to put us 2 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. So we visit those futures in our minds, right? We visit them in a completely imaginative kind of way. We model those universes. But as far as actually, you know, anyone being there and coming back from there, sadly, I don't think we have a lot of reason to believe that's the case. Although, if anyone's listening and you got a story to tell us about, you know, how you live in a universe where they've got whatever it is, nuclear fusion power, self-driving cars, people marrying robots, any of this future stuff we talk about, and if your memory is it's already happening, I think we want to hear from them. Would you agree, Stephen?
Well, you know,
Stephen's
first,
like, Phil wants
yeah,
to hear from
first,
you, okay? Call
yeah.
Phil. Here's Phil's phone
yeah,
number.
Yeah, call Phil. Call him, yeah. First, check your meds, make sure that you are taking them, and then call us, you know.
But
you're right.
Okay, so here's the next one, and this one is actually much closer to home than any of these weird way out futures. I don't know if you've read any of this New York Times story about people talking about how hard it is working at Amazon. Did you catch any of that?
Yeah, it's kind of a sad story, she, you know, what she went through as a woman working at Amazon, which is, you know, it's particularly sad, because I would guess that the average consumer that Amazon caters to, it probably skews slightly female. I would just guess.
Well, or is like, yeah, this piece I linked by Julia Shefitz. I mean, she even points out in there, women run Amazon. You know, I had the original Amazon Prime account in this household, and I use it quite a bit. But let me tell you, you know, after the baby started showing up, my wife took that thing over, and she is like the Amazon maestro, okay? And I think that's probably true in a lot of households. I mean, I think that women are a force to be reckoned with on Amazon. And, yeah, that does make it just all the worse if things like this are occurring. And this is one woman's story. I had a baby and cancer when I worked at Amazon, and the way she was treated, the way she describes, you know, just kind of shoddy things going on behind her back while she's out on maternity leave, just total lack of empathy for the fact that she has cancer, is like one magnified instance of what was in that earlier New York Times story, which is just, you know, story after story after story about horrible stuff like this going on at Amazon. This very driven culture is described, in any case, where, you know, people rarely get a break, and people who really need a break, who are going through diseases or family traumas or you know, other disruptions in their lives are made to feel like they're falling down in the job and they're in the way, according to that story in the New York Times. And I read that, and this is my analogy to the whole parallel universe thing, okay? Because we think of these big tech companies, in a sense, as being another world. You know what I mean? It's like for people who work at regular companies, you know, working at someplace like Google or Apple, it was just like, you know, it's almost like being in a different country, or, you know, being in a movie or living in a different world or something like that. But really, when it comes right down to it, their company is just like any other company. And this kind of crap goes on everywhere, unfortunately. I don't say that to excuse any bad thing that's happened anywhere. I say it, you know, very much as a, that's a shame everywhere it occurs, right? This is not in any way making it okay that it occurs at Amazon or any place else. But I feel like when we read a story like this, we're shocked to hear that Amazon is like that. But I've heard stories like this at companies that aren't Amazon, right, that are just normal places where people work. And, what you always think is, well, gee, what a bunch of jerks that they, that they treated somebody like that. I wonder if this is a sign of the times in terms of how competitive businesses have become, how driven businesses have become, and sure, technology companies are going to be on the cutting edge of that. That we're kind of working humans out of the system, as we've discussed. Some of these biggest, most profitable companies in the world don't have that many people working for them, and they're automating people out of existence all the time. Maybe they're also sort of automating, I don't know, human feeling out of existence at the same time. You know, they're automating, basic empathy and compassion out of existence. I hope not, right? I hope that's not happening. But if it is, doesn't this just speak all the more clearly for the need for the post-employment world that we've talked about so many times? It's like, ultimately, big companies maybe are evolving into these toxic environments where regular people just can't survive. And they'll have to be machines because they're the only ones who can produce fast enough to keep companies competitive. And I'm telling you, if anybody woke up and said, "Oh yeah, what's going on? I have a job," you know, that whole job thing ended 10 years ago, right? We all just get our paycheck from Amazon, right? And nobody, or you know, Apple or whatever it is, nobody works anymore. That would be a real visit to a. To an alternate word, but I don't know, Stephen. What do you think? Am I too gloomy about this, or is this something that's really happening?
Well, I was just thinking, example of companies trying to treat humans like machines in a way. I hear about it a lot with the local casinos where I live, Phil. They have, and it might not just be the casinos. It might be other businesses as well that are experimenting with things like this, but they have a point system. You lose a point for being late to work. You lose a certain, maybe 2 points for missing half a day, and 3 or 4 points for missing a full day. And if you get to 10 points, you're out. That's
wow.
It. There's no, I had cancer. Well, there are plenty of people who don't have cancer who can do your job. I'm getting them. It's
right.
No grace, no understanding whatsoever in those kind of jobs. And I see that a lot because, I'm a personal injury attorney. People come to me, they've been involved in an accident, and they are, I've got a broken leg. I literally can't go and mop the floor at this job. And I will lose my job in 3 days because I will have lost enough points at that point that my job will be gone. And it's all as a result of this accident. And, so I see that sort of thing a lot. And it's, I think it's just awful that there's, the way some businesses treat their people. And, I see a lot of that. I would like a parallel universe where people did not treat their employees quite that bad.
I think have
a little bit of understanding.
Yeah, with very little time left, I'll say the upside is people won't stand for it. Either either we are going to evolve people out of the workplace completely, which maybe this is a sign that that's happening, or people are just going to finally push back and employers have to start treating people like people. And maybe that's not a bad idea anyway. Well, that does it for the show, Stephen. We've run completely out of time. What's our music this evening?
Our music is K by Color Out.
Color Out with K. Well, thanks, Stephen. Great talking with you again. We've just gone on and on. And we'll be back again next week. We'll let you know. It's probably going to be Wednesday, probably late on Wednesday, but we'll let you know for sure when that is. And until next time, live to see it.
Me now, have your